Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can be happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host, Sandy Fowler. And you know how much we love doing this podcast and sharing these incredible guests with you. And we really, truly are committed to keeping it commercial-free, because who wants to listen to all that garbage when you can get information that can actually help you and your family? So you can help us keep these shows commercial-free by visiting mightyparenting.com/support and see all that we have, all the different ways that you can support us. And today, I am thrilled because you've heard in previous episodes that we talk about things like screen time and communication and how to have a good relationship with your child. And all of those are so important in raising those happy, emotionally healthy, and successful kids, right? Well, today we're going to talk about health in a more traditional sense of the word, because when we don't feel good physically, it can set us up for so many things that make life harder. We can misinterpret what other people say. We might not put our best foot forward, or we might end up reacting differently with our kids than we normally would. And not only will it affect us, but it can affect our ability to parent our kids in a really effective way, in the way that is part of the goals for our entire family. And as parents, we may see something as a mental or behavioral health issue when really it's a physical or environmental issue.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, Jude, you hit on it there, because actually I think I just mentioned it in a fairly recent episode that we thought my daughter was dealing with depression. And what it really was is that we discovered her lethargy was due to a nutritional issue. And the attitude that seemed like one, you know, that was consistent with depression was really stemming from the way she felt physically and the way we were responding to her because of our thoughts around the idea of her being depressed. So when we got her the right supplements, did some small adjustments to her diet, and in just a few weeks, I found my daughter again. You know, she was back. She was herself again. And that's the kind of thing that can mess us up. You know, we think we're doing good parenting, but we're parenting the wrong thing. And that's why I've been looking forward to chatting with today's guest, Megan Whitaker, because Megan has a lot of knowledge around the subject of health, both from an educational standpoint and a personal one. So she herself dealt with some health problems in her teens and 20s, so she knows what it's like to chase down the problems. She has a degree with a concentration in psychology, as well as a second degree in nursing. And she is also a certified health coach and is certified in meditation. She provides individual coaching and corporate wellness programs, but she's got all that professional side, she's got that knowledge, but she's also a wife and she's a mom, so she understands the logistical, the time issues, the emotional issues around this subject as well. So Megan, welcome to Mighty Parenting, and thanks for taking the time to chat with our community today.
Thank you so much, and what a nice intro.
That's funny. Well, Sandy, I know that you were going to start this off today, but I have to jump in here because I'm sitting here listening and I go, okay, my kid is all healthy and fine, so I really don't need this. But Megan, I know that parents out there may be going, my child is healthy, so why is this interview so important? So can you talk to us about why this applies to every family out there?
Absolutely. So our American culture is really illness focused. We want to talk about disease, like disease, versus being healthy. And that is not the true state of being in the body. You're not either totally ill or totally great. There is a continuum of wellness, and it's so important that we get our bodies to the optimum level of wellness. Like, you might be fine, and your kid might not be sick, But that doesn't mean that you are as vital and as well as you could be. And that also doesn't mean that you aren't compensating for something that we just haven't seen yet. And there is so much going on in our world for our kids that we did not have when I was a kid. So, you know, we don't necessarily kind of know what health problems everybody is going to have in 5, 10 years, or even right now with the world as it is today.
So that's interesting, Megan. And I think I'd like to start out actually digging into what you just talked about there a little bit. Because I talked about, you know, you have a background in Western medicine, nursing.
I do.
As well as being certified as a health coach and in meditation. And you actually, on your website, you had childbirth classes and things, which
yes,
you know, we're hopefully, some of us are going, hopefully we're done with that. You know, when we're in that teens and 20s, most of us are kind of going, ooh, not ready for that. But you have both, it sounds like almost both sides of that. And so I'd like to talk just a little about medicine and holistic living. Like, what are the differences? Do they work together? Is there actually a relationship there? Like, what do we need to know about that?
So all medicine, you know, when you say like traditional Western medicine, traditional medicine is not really Western medicine. Traditional medicine is herbs and plants and things that grow out of the ground, energy and more what now we would say is kind of woo-hoo kinds of medicine. And that is now alternative medicine. We have technologically outgrown a lot of the older, now unusual kinds of things that most people, most physicians no longer are taught, so no longer use. So for instance, you know, we don't use herbs and spices anymore, not because they don't work necessarily, but we can't quantify them. We can't dial it down to a specific dose. So most doctors aren't going to prescribe something like turmeric or ginger because you can't say take 200 grams of ginger 3 times a day. It isn't a prescription. And now we have a very scientific way of breaking down medications. And that is what they are taught in school, and that is what is regulated by the FDA. And physicians are only going to prescribe things that are regulated by the FDA. So hopefully that makes a little bit of sense.
It does. And what's really interesting is you open up that topic about nutrition and food and supplements and medicines, our food in general is so much different than it was back in the day when they used a lot of the herbal supplements. And it almost seems like as doctors are trained to use prescription medications as opposed to more of the herbalistic and things, the food is getting worse and worse. So it's a compound problem.
It is absolutely a compound problem. And food is not, it's not necessarily even made of the same things that it used to be. And not just GMO versus non-GMO, the ground that food is grown in, every nutrient that it is going to get has to come out of the ground, which means it has to be in the ground. And if you know anything about soil depletion, our soil is so much different than it was even 100 years ago because we do not rotate crops anymore, things like that. So the profile of our food, like the vitamin C level of an orange, is actually different than it was 150 years ago. So there are a lot of compounding factors here, but physicians typically, and every school is different, but most physicians get about 12 to 15 hours of nutrition studies in all of medical school.
That's interesting. Well, so let me see if I've got this right. So essentially what we're saying is that there was traditional medicine, is traditional medicine, which is actually now called alternative medicine.
Yes.
And the people who help us in that arena are focusing on things that grow, the plants and things and energy and the way that nature can help us have optimum health. And our physicians, our MDs, our, what they said, Western medicine, they are trained to use pharmaceuticals, things approved by the FDA, to repair
disease
when we're broken,
an illness.
Actual disease.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you have a staph infection, MRSA, if you need surgery, your physician is, you know, well equipped and highly educated. But if it, you know, things, there are other things like nutrition and supplements where they haven't had as much schooling. But it isn't necessarily even about, you know, nutrition versus medicine. It is more about a lot of alternative practitioners or people who focus on environmental medicine or just environmental health. You know, we're just focusing more on overall wellness or how your body can be, you know, how you can have the most amount of energy or be the most vital versus being treated for an active acute problem.
And this, I mean, I guess that's kind of the way I see it is this isn't an either or a versus. This is a continuum of care, a continuum of approaches, of resources, of knowledge. We as parents, it's really just a matter of understanding that there are lots of things out there and we can talk to different people to get different pieces of the puzzle, recognizing what their area of education is specialized in. So
absolutely, you
know, my daughter who had started out, we thought she had a thyroid problem, but her doctor's like, no, her blood work doesn't show that. So there was nothing that she knew of or had at her disposal to take care of because her thyroid was still managing to make enough hormone. It was just struggling to do it. And we needed to find the nutritional support to help keep it from going bad. If it had already gone bad and she needed that hormone replaced, then her MD would have had that and the other doctor may not have had that at their disposal. It's tools and information and things at their disposal and what they know, right?
Exactly. And that's actually kind of how I got into this. I got sick and I had been unwell, but nobody really knew what was wrong with me until I got super sick. And then I started having changes in my blood work. And then they were able to kind of medicate that to a point. But then I was still back to that baseline of I was all right, but I was not well. And then I focused on my environment. And when I took all of the chemicals in my environment out, then I really got better. My physicians did a ton for me, but I wasn't at the point where I knew that my body, you know, how I felt like my body should be working. And once I was able to get rid of all of the other stuff around me, I was working in I was working in a field that was very heavy in chemicals. And once I got all those chemicals away from me, I got much, much better. And then I fell down what I call the crunchy rabbit hole.
That's interesting, you know, because that's immediately what we think, right, Megan? We think if we go on this side of looking at alternatives, that we become this crunchy person and it's all or nothing. And what I'm hearing you say is that it's really this balance because there are pieces of both that will actually give us that optimal health in not only ourselves, but in our kids.
Absolutely. You should never, in this day and age, there is no reason to go all Western medicine forever or all alternative medicine forever because both are so valuable. And really, truly, I mean, as a nurse, I think have a lot to learn from each other. There's just not, you know, there's just not enough time in medical school or in nursing school for everyone to learn everything, which is why it's so great that we have other people who have dedicated their time into learning these things.
Yeah, and I want to not shift our direction, but I want to expand this a little bit because we kind of got caught up in talking, I think, a little bit much about food and medicine, and there are other factors. You know, you talk about healthy living, and in fact, one of the things you educate people on is the pitfalls of wellness with modern living.
Yes.
And I kind of wanted to go there for a minute. Like, what do you mean by modern living and how does that affect our wellness?
So, yeah, I focus very much on our environment and how our lifestyle has changed so much in the last like 100 or so years and how that's impacting our health, which is what it was impacting my health. And I found a lot of things that we do differently today that are really easy to fix that can have a big impact on you, whether or not you're sick. My favorite thing to talk about, especially with people who have teenagers or young adults, people who work online like I do, is our phones. And there's a lot of hype about screen time, as in how much time I am sitting in front of this device. But we don't talk a whole lot about what the device is actually doing to our body. And there's a few things that have been very well studied, specifically the light that comes out of your phone. You know, about, oh, I guess 15, 20 years ago, there was a big revolution in light where we got LED lights that were white and they looked like the sun, and everybody got LED lights in their house that were like true white light. So that white light is actually rich in blue. And blue light, there is a specific receptor in your eye that looks only for blue light. And that's actually how you set your circadian rhythm. So when we look at devices that are really, really rich in blue light late into the evening or right before bed, your brain thinks that it's daytime. And we actually don't produce enough melatonin. There is a chemical, it's melanopsin. It stops our melatonin production. And that is the hormone we need to get sleepy and fall asleep and regulate our sleep cycles. So when your kid is, you know, scrolling through Instagram, or when I'm scrolling through Instagram right before I go to bed, it is actually suppressing my melatonin.
Okay. So how does that affect our kids when we do that?
Yeah, same thing. You know, once the sun goes down, you are designed to start getting sleepy, and you're designed to start getting sleepy because we no longer have that blue light. So if your kids are on the computer late doing homework, if they're looking at their phones, if they're playing with their iPad after the sun goes down or late into dusk, it stops that melatonin, and it, you know, when they lay down to go to sleep and then they can't sleep, or they're not getting their good full sleep cycles, that melatonin is what is regulating our sleep cycle. So when we haven't produced enough right before bed, we can't sleep, and we're getting a lot of sleep disruption. It's one of the reasons that we have kids that are staying up till 2-3 o'clock in the morning.
So what are your recommendations around that?
Really, really easy. There's a couple of free programs, which I love. So your phone does this automatically a little bit. If you have an iPhone or an Android, they're set up to do what's called a night shift. About 6 o'clock, you'll notice that they tint. It's not really enough. It's a good start. They'll go a little amber, but you can download programs like Flux. It's F.LUX, and it's free for Android and for desktop computers. And you tell it where you live and what time you want to go to bed, and it will actually tint your screen for you as the evening progresses. And so you get less and less and less blue as the sun goes down. You can also get, I have really nifty red glasses and yellow glasses that I wear at night so that I can watch TV late. They're called blue blocking eyewear, and there are many companies that make them. There's some great options out there. But really, it's just about stopping those blue wavelengths from hitting your eye. That's all you got to do. So you can get the Flux, you can get eye glasses, you can even get some of those like screen protectors for your phone that come in blue blocking technology.
Is there one for the iPhones? I know you mentioned the
Android. Yes, there is. So Flux does not come on the iPhone, but you can teach your phone. You can tell your phone to night shift, and that will help a little bit. And then you can get a screen protector for the iPhone. Flux doesn't come on the iPhone. That's the only thing it doesn't do. But you can. I've actually taught mine in accessibility. You can tint your screen manually, and I do that sometimes late at night as well. You can go in, and there are screen color options, and you can tint it red.
Gotcha. And so for teens, when sleep is such an important part of their growth and their brain development and everything, this is huge in my book.
Studies from Harvard that are showing this is having a really significant impact on children and teens. It's causing behavioral issues and stuff because they're not getting a full sleep cycle. And that is when we do so much memory work, especially for kids who are in school who have, you know, tests the next day. You know, that's where we dump our short-term memory to our long-term memory.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to the whole computer stuff, is there other things in this modern living, you know, in the way that we function on a regular basis that affect our kids in this whole, you know, the pitfalls, I guess, of wellness?
Yeah. So what happened to me was I was a makeup artist, actually. I worked in makeup and special effects. I worked at a warehouse, and I made latex masks, and I wore lots of makeup. I lived with a hairstylist. My hair has never looked better, but I had lots of different colors of hair. I was getting it cut all the time. And I mean, I used a lot of products. I used a lot of products on people. I made applications, and there was a lot of chemicals. And so right now, there are about 88,000 chemicals that are registered for use in consumer products in the United States. Only 8,000 of those have been tested extensively for safety in humans. So it's a little bit less than 10% of the chemicals that you come in contact with on a daily basis have been tested for safety.
So you're not just talking about chemicals used like in a work environment.
No.
You're saying
no, I'm talking about exposure. I'm talking about the perfumes that you're putting on, the lipstick that you're putting on, the shampoo. Most of those, they're considered generally regarded as safe, or many of them were grandfathered in the 30s and 40s when the safety laws were coming into effect. They got grandfathered in because there weren't known risks, so they never went back and tested them. But you also, the companies are the ones responsible for testing. The FDA is not responsible for testing. They only have to test if there has been a complaint, and there has to be a fair number of complaints. So most of our chemicals are not tested. And the average person puts about 200 chemicals on every single day.
Wow. So amazing.
So, like, I mean, when you think about your, 12, 13, 14-year-old, daughters, or even, your 14, 15-year-old sons who are spraying Axe all over themselves.
and everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, me getting ready for a dance in high school, it was a process. I woke up early in the morning. I mean, I did many things. But then I worked in the industry. And when I was working as a makeup artist, I lived in Los Angeles. And at that time, there was, I don't think I can say the name of the hair treatment because I'm pretty sure it's trademarked, but there was a hair treatment out there that was very popular among actresses and the want-to-be actresses in Los Angeles. And for several months, every day on the news, they were talking about all of these women who were being sent to the emergency room who were having this process done at salons, and there was so much formaldehyde, it was making them acutely ill, and they were being transported to the hospital.
Wow.
That's so, when I realized that there might be something about what I was doing in my life that was making me sick, because I had such bad arthritis that I was no longer able to walk, and they couldn't figure out why. I was 22.
So in listening here, I'm instantly, the mom in me and the person in me says, what is it that I need to be looking for in those products to know not to use them? So that, is there something that is, to let me know what would be dangerous and what wouldn't be dangerous?
There is one really good website. It is the Environmental Working Group. It's an organization that has compounded a list of, it's like 70,000 something products. And you can go into their database. It's called Skin Deep at the EWG.org. And you can put in the name of your favorite product, and it will actually populate all of the ingredients that are listed and where that falls on a level of, on a scale of toxicity. So it'll tell you how toxic it is, and it will tell you why. So it will say formaldehyde, and it will give you, I think formaldehyde is a 9 out of 10. And it will tell you that, this chemical is known to cause, like cancer in certain animals. It causes hormone disruptions in these animals. So the big things that we're looking for are the hormone disrupting chemicals, which is most of what is in our beauty products. We have a lot of hormone disrupting chemicals, specifically estrogenic mimickers. So these chemicals, they get into your body and your body thinks that they look a lot like your sex hormones. And they can cause a lot of hormonal problems, especially thyroid issues and hormone balance issues in women. And those are very heavy in fragrances. So you will see products with lots and lots of different fragrances listed, but also you will just see where it says fragrance. When it just says fragrance, this is a catch-all term in beauty products, where if it's less than 1% of the product, they can just say that it's fragrance, and they can also list it as fragrance if it's considered proprietary information that they don't want their competitors to know their formulation of. So that means that up to 1% of a product is unlisted ingredients that they don't have to tell you what's in it.
Hmm. It could be truly anything. So we want to avoid that.
Truly anything. And you'd be shocked. I mean, there are a lot of really great companies that I love that are organic, handmade, wonderful, that still list fragrance because, you know, they just have, you know, they have 30 or 40 other ingredients that they don't want to list that are a minuscule amount of the product and they do not want to list it. And so they will lump it under fragrance. And so it can be very hard. And that is one of the reasons that I always say, like, you really need to know the companies. Small companies, really, you can get into their ingredients online. If it's a company that is really transparent about what's in the product, you know, always look for online listed ingredients, where those ingredients come from, things like that. There is a law in California that if there is any kind of heavy metal, it has to have a warning on it. But there are heavy metals in a lot of like muds and earth-based things. So anything that has like clay in it will often have like this warning that says that it can cause cancer. And so there are a lot of companies that have gone online and listed all their ingredients and they will list out exactly where they got, you know, their bentonite clay. And, you know, that there could be trace mineral, you know, trace amounts of lead, but this is why they feel like it's safe. And I like those companies because I am an information person. I'm a big science geek. And so I always look for companies that give me too much information.
So what about those of us who are like, I don't want to dig into the science of it. And like you just said, you know, there can be a good reason for them to use the term fragrance. Mm-hmm. So if we're just, you know, nothing's going to be perfect. That's one thing I have learned in life is you're never going to find the perfect solution. And if you think you found the perfect solution, somebody's going to come up with some science that says, oh, by the way, your thought process was wrong.
You are so right.
if we're going to do something like this and go, okay, you know, I get it's not all perfect, but 200 chemicals. And when you first said that, I was like, how on earth? But then I just thought about, well, just look at body lotion. How many things are listed there? Your deodorant, we're not even talking about makeup and stuff yet. Just take a shower so you get clean, moisturize, and put on some deodorant. And yep, you've got a whole ton there. So
yeah, you're at 50 right there.
Yeah, I don't care about the science, and I don't have the inclination, and certainly busy parents are like, I don't have the time to research this. What can we do? How can we make this better for our family, you know, at least better in a quick way?
Definitely look, I mean, turn everything over and look at the ingredients. You want to know what most of them are in plain English. If there's a whole bunch of chemical names with lots of numbers behind them, those are some of the more problematic guys. If you can read it and it says things like orange oil and, you know, lanolin and things that you can pronounce, I say if you can pronounce it, it's probably okay. And then always look for paraben-free is really important, especially the younger your children are. The parabens are one of those nasty chemicals that get into your body and can create some havoc that we have good science on. So paraben-free is something that I always suggest is a good kind of jumping off point. But really, if it is really strongly fragranced, if it is something that is going to last for days, and I know people like to smell good, I get it, like nobody wants to smell bad. But the longer something lasts fragrance-wise, the more things that are in that to bind and the harsher that chemical is probably a man-made chemical. If you can smell it for a couple of days, that is something that is probably going to be leaching into your body. And think about it, you know, you smooth something on your skin, and so that absorbs in about 60 seconds. And so what you are getting it into your body, it is not just on the outside. So, you know, you don't have to memorize 200 chemicals. I haven't. I love, you know, there's a Skin Deep app. I take a picture of it and put it in my app, and it spits out like a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I love it. Like, I try to stay below a 6. And, you know, everybody, okay, you know, has their number.
Yeah, so, well, you know, but you I can like just, that. Because I've been on that site, and, you know, I went on there first time, and I'm thinking, okay, I need to find zeros or ones. And you're like,
no.
Oh, my gosh, even my most beloved products that, you know, I'm like, I was totally convinced this would be great. I'm like, well, crap. You know what I mean? There's still stuff. What do I do? So I love that.
I like to stay below a 6. Okay. And some people, if they have really bad allergies or if they know that they are susceptible to something, it's a great resource. But if you're just trying to stay away from things that are, you know, super, super toxic, you know, stay below a 6, stay below a 7. There is nothing, you know, there's nothing wrong with not hitting 0. I, I'm, I'm trying to think all that off my head. I don't know if I own any products that would be considered zero.
Okay.
So all right. Before we wrap up, Sandy, I know we're almost done.
We're not wrapping up.
Oh, okay.
We have more questions.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I really am dying to know after hearing all of this that you say is, if we're noticing things going on in our kids, are there some general indicators that would kind of support the thing that they're getting too much chemicals in their body and that would be what to look for? Are there behaviors or indicators that something is happening because of the products or the things that we're doing or the environment that we're in?
Well, so most of the science and the research that is coming out kind of suggests that we all have a bucket, and the more, you know, chemicals you put in the bucket, it gets fuller and fuller and fuller, and everybody detoxifies at a different rate. We all have different levels of exposure, and basically what happens is that after a certain period of time, you kind of reach your limit. And once it spills over, that's when you start to see things like thyroid issues that are things that are chemically related, or really bad arthritis pain, people's hair falling out, things like that are often environmental. Asthma and allergies, food allergies, rashes, those tend to be, you know, really heavily environmentally stimulated. Now, a lot of behavioral stuff tends to be food additives. So if you're really worried about some behavior issues, sudden behavior changes, things like that, one of the really easy things to do would be to just take out food dyes and food additives. There have been several studies that have very strongly linked behavior issues to food dye. And that is so easy because there are some still, I mean, you can still get chicken nuggets and french fries and like really kid happy food, fruits and veggies and everything, obviously, but just taking a lot of red dye, yellow dye, and blue dye out can make a big impact. And, you know, after 2 or 3 weeks, if you're not seeing a change, you know that that's not it. And now you can move on to step number two.
And it is interesting. I was actually just talking to Judy about, I was on the road and had been just hitting that stress point, and I am a stress eater. It's something I've been working on and have gotten better at, and sometimes it just slides. And I'd had to go up to the store to get some other things, and all the cookies kept calling my name. And I picked up something else that I knew wasn't really a healthy choice. It was one of these like veggie chip things. I get it's dehydrated, compressed dust. But I'm like, that should be better than cookies. But I ate that, and I felt worse than if I had bought the cookies. And it's not that these are bad and those are good. It's just that idea of, it really drove home the point of how much what we eat in a moment could be a mood or behavior change. Because I was certainly a very different person that afternoon than I would have been had I just kept eating what I normally eat, the food that I know makes me feel good. And I love that idea of going, if you're seeing behavior issues in your kid, try this.
Because with food, I say the same thing as I do with stuff that I put on my body. If you has ingredients that I can say, I mean, that sounds pretty good. If I know what it is, it's probably, my body probably knows what it is. When it's things that have numbers behind them that I don't know how to pronounce, those are the things that I worry about, even in health food, because health food is just a name that we've given food. So if it's a cookie and it's got, you know, real chocolate and real butter and real eggs, I know that my body's going to like it, even, you know, if my blood sugar doesn't.
Exactly. Well, I just want to know, if I could only do one thing, Megan, what is the one thing I should start with?
You should say, what would my grandmother have done?
I really?
Love that.
That's true. Oh. Explain, just quickly.
I want to live as close to what my grandmother did or my great-grandmother did as possible, because I know that worked. I knew what was in those products. I know what was in that food. And so I always go back to that. I can add in little bits of technology, a little bits of newfangledness here and there, but I trust that. And that works for me.
Oh my gosh. And that resonates with me because, you know, my tended grandparents generation, great grandparents, it's like they're in their 90s and hundreds. And when they got there, they're all living in their own house. I mean, yeah, they have aches and pains. They have some issues, but they were in general in great health. And they did, they grew up on farms and, you know, made their own food, and they didn't have a lot of the super busyness that we have. That's another lifestyle thing. This ultra.
Yeah, they played in the dirt. They ate real food and they slept.
And they slept there, right there. What would my grandmother have done? Slept. Okay. So real quick, a few key points. I just want to go back and go, so our American culture is affecting us. And one of the things that affects us is that it is focused on, as far as our medicine goes, it's focused on you have a disease or you're healthy. When what we actually have known for a long time, but are reaffirming, is that there's a continuum of wellness. And what we really want is to be at our optimum, because as Judy, as you all, we were talking about that too, right? We want good relationships with our kids. When we're cranky and we don't feel good and all of those things are going on, we don't have good relationships and our kids can't live the way we want them to live. So what we need to understand is that life is different now. The profile of our food is different now. And we don't need to necessarily fall down the crunchy rabbit hole, but we can make some shifts. We can recognize that our phones have some issues. It doesn't mean we have to get rid of them. We need to take steps to help them. And we'll put links to the things that that you mentioned, Megan. We'll put links in the show notes for the different apps and some of that, as well as, of course, notes about what you said. So we need to take care of that blue light thing. We need to realize that sleep is essential in our crazy modern life. We need to do that. So both from the phone standpoint and just making time for it. We need to recognize that we are bombarded by chemicals, that the average person puts on over 200 chemicals daily, and we don't know what they're going to do to us. So it's a good idea in general to try to find things that have don't have things that we know are an issue. And again, we'll put that link for the Environmental Working Group in the notes. We want to just look at taking care of ourselves. But if we're having issues in our home, if our child is experiencing issues, whether it's a physical malady, whether it's a behavioral issue, anger outbursts even, that we can try looking at the environment from a chemical standpoint, a busyness, a screen standpoint, as well as a food standpoint, and try cleaning up some of those things and see if that helps before we dive down a medicine-based rabbit hole trying to treat things. I know I've talked to parents before who they thought their child had ADHD, and they came to find out that it was food additives that were causing the hyperactive behavior. So those are the kind of the high points with a little editorial note from me. But wrapping up, your major quote was, if we were going to do one thing, just keep asking ourselves the question, what would my grandmother have done? And Megan, for people who are going, this is amazing and I want to know more from her, where can they find you?
I am at goingcrunchynotcrazy.com. It's also the name of my podcast, and I am on Instagram far too often at Going Crunchy Not Crazy as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Megan. And for all of our listeners, thank you for being part of the Mighty Parenting community. If it is your first time listening, welcome. What a great show to start off and kick off being part of all the Mighty Parents here. And we want to invite you to go to mightyparenting.com to see all that we have to support you, including our brand new How to Talk to Your Teen email series. And if you've been a longtime listener here, we are so happy that you come back and join us week after week. And just want to give you a simple reminder that you are a mighty parent. No matter what you're dealing with, no matter what challenges your family is facing, you got this. This is Judy Davis, along with Sandy Fowler and our amazing guest, wishing you the best week ever.